The committee will come to order. The Legislative Revenue Advisory Committee will start with the calling of the roll.
Chairman Holmberg.
Here.
Senators Cook.
Here.
Heckman.
Here.
Wardner.
Here.
Representatives Delzer.
Here.
O'Shea.
Here.
Quamine.
Here.
Pollard.
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
Okay. The next item is the consideration of the minutes of the August 15th meeting. Could we have a motion on the minutes? We have a motion and seconded. Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Motion carried. We are here today because of a request for proposal that this committee sent out regarding revenue advisory forecast data for the Legislative Assembly during the next session. And as you have seen by our agenda today, we have two proposals that we are going to hear from today. And then after the proposals have been presented to us, the committee will make a decision as to which of those proposals we would like to go forward with. I believe you all have received copies of the proposals along with a Legislative Council background memo on the different points of those proposals. If you recall, last session was the first time we had such a legislative revenue forecast, and as also you recall, by the time everything was done, the proposal that came from OMB and the proposal that the legislators worked with were kind of bookends to what we finally decided to do. And this last legislative session decided we were happy that we had numbers that we could work with ourselves along with Legislative Council. So proposal was that we go forward and do this again. The agenda will start with a presentation by Legislative Council staff. And then we have on the agenda two proposals. Even though they are written on the agenda, we always we end up drawing as to who's going to make the first presentation and who's going to make the second presentation. And I suggested to Adam that we should have Joe Morissette draw from the pile, but we won't put him in that awkward position where he would have to report to the governor what he did. So we will start with a presentation by Adam.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, so we prepared the memorandum that summarizes the two proposals. It also provides a summary of the RFP so that you're familiar with the criteria that were included in the RFP for consideration as you evaluate these proposals. So we did, as requested by the committee, we did issue the RFP on September 3rd for the economic consulting services. The RFP indicated that the consultant should provide information related to the general forecasting conditions, primarily related to the national economy, including things like the interest rates, West Texas intermediate oil prices, the value of the dollar, and the major economic sectors and how they are anticipated to perform over the next few years. In addition, the RFP also asks the consultant to look at data specific to North Dakota's economy, including trends in the state's major economic sectors, as well as, you know, assumptions that are related to the oil and gas industry and the agricultural industry. We also ask the consultant to provide forecasting data, and this is the core of the request, is the forecasted data related to North Dakota's sales and use tax collections, motor vehicle excise tax collections, individual income tax collections, and corporate income tax collections. And as part of those forecasted values, the RFP requests that the consultant provides a low scenario, a high scenario, and a most likely scenario for the committee and the legislature's consideration. In addition, there are some other economic factors specific to North Dakota that we ask the consultant to provide, including agriculture, commodity prices and production values, oil production levels for North Dakota, and then assessing some of the risks to North Dakota's economy. We had the proposals were due related to the RFP on November 8th, 2019, and we received two proposals. The two proposals came from the Institute of Policy and Business Analytics and IHS Markit. The Institute of Policy and Business Analytics is part of North Dakota, or University of North Dakota, and is located in Grand Forks. IHS Markit is headquartered in Colorado, but they also have some locations throughout the world. Both of the consultants identified key personnel that would be involved in working with the forecasts and providing the data. So you can see the various individuals listed there. Both of the consultants identified areas of expertise and experience in their proposals. The Institute of Policy and Business Analytics mentioned that they have done forecasting for sales and use tax collections for the city of Grand Forks, and they also have experience with some of the idiosyncrasies of North Dakota's economy. IHS Markit, as you know, provided the forecasting last interim, and they've also provided revenue forecasting for other states and cities, including the Senate Finance Committee for the state of New York and the city of Philadelphia. As far as the costs of the proposals, those are identified at the end. The cost from the Institute of Policy and Business Analytics was $70,120, and then IHS Markit submitted their proposal with a cost of $68,989.86. So, Mr. Chairman, with that would conclude my presentation. The consultants will be able to provide additional information about their specific proposals, but I can answer any questions at this time.
Are there any questions of Adam on his proposal? Yes. Representative Delzer.
Mr. Chairman, not really a question about this, but just for my own information, can anybody tell me when the census for 2020 will be done?
Will be done. It is taken. April 1st is the date that the item is done. The data, we get the final numbers during the legislative session, it seemed to me. We got preliminary numbers.
The final isn't until 2021?
Right, we get it right at the beginning of 2021.
Right. That's what I was wondering.
And then traditionally we have at least in 1981, 91, 2001, 2011, the legislature formed a committee to make recommendations, and then we had a special session or a reconvened session that fall, October, November,
Mr. Chairman, it wasn't about that. It was about the fact that, you know, they want to have estimated population projections for a couple of years, and I was just wondering when these people would have that information.
So. I don't know if they would get it. I would be surprised if they got it early, but
wouldn't think anybody would.
Maybe they can answer that question, too.
Okay,
anything else for Adam? Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Heckman.
On these proposals, Adam, are there a number of times that they're going to present to us as legislators? Is there initial presentation and then an update forecast? What have they indicated that?
Mr. Chairman, I'm a member of the committee. So yes, there, as part of the RFP, we did specifically request certain times that they would provide a report with the forecasting data. So modeling it after last time, there would be a report with a preliminary forecast due in September of 2020, so next September. And that kind of gives you a chance to look at things before the session starts, and the committee would receive that. But then the consultant would provide two additional forecasts, one in January and one in March, and those would be provided to the appropriations committees for their consideration with the development of the budget.
Any other questions? Okay. The next item on the agenda is presentations regarding proposals. And we have a cup here. And because Adam is our staff person and Alan is just sitting here watching, we'll have Alan draw, and the name drawn will be the ones that make the first presentation.
The Institute of Business Analytics at UND.
Okay. And I will check, because once I did it at home when we had drawing, I put my name on all the cards. Yeah. Just so you know, yes, it's legit.
Blue light means it's on? Okay.
Good morning. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Yeah, good afternoon. My name is David Flynn. I'm a resident of Grand Forks, North Dakota. I'm here representing the Institute of Policy and Business Analytics and the Nistler College of Business and Public Administration. This institute is a new entity within the College of Business and Public Administration, and I'm very proud and pleased to say that this proposal is one of the first official activities that this institute's undertaken. The mission of the institute is to conduct basic and applied research that serves the region, the state, provides educational opportunities, and enhances public outreach and engagement. I think that working on a matter as important as forecasting of state revenues and other economic conditions falls well within the conducting basic research that serves the region as well as serves the state. One of the wonderful attributes about this institute is that it is a interdisciplinary vehicle within the college. We have marketers, we have accountants, we have finance, econ, and so on down the line. We think that that is a relatively positive attribute of this institute, allowing us to take a great and broad look at factors related to forecasting revenues and economic conditions in the state. It was my privilege to talk to this committee in the summer of 2017 to talk about revenue forecasts and revenue forecasting. North Dakota's need for quality forecasts, I don't think, is any less today than it was then. Sound fiscal management demands it. Prudent economic stewardship requires it. It's our belief that the Institute possesses the right combination of skills and information to provide the forecasts that are needed by the legislature as they deliberate going into the biennium session. Our technical expertise comes from a collective 40 years of teaching forecasting, statistics, and applied data analysis, much of it using data related to and about North Dakota and policy in North Dakota. We've conducted many significant projects related to North Dakota data over the years, and we're confident that we possess the technical expertise you require to give forecast and commentary on the macroeconomic events and outlook, monetary and financial variables, commodity markets that are so fundamental to this state, tax revenue streams, and other variables and hypotheses and scenarios that are put forward by the legislature. I'm going to assume, but if I'm wrong, please let me know, that we don't want me to go into technical details of forecasting models at this time. I will offer up that we do know and have the ability to evaluate forecasts and forecast accuracy, have done so in the past in looking at the OMB forecast. This is something we generated several years ago called the tracking signal, looking at the total revenues forecast by the state. As it gets outside the dashed line, you can see that that's a problem. That starts to be an issue where the forecast is not correcting itself, where there is some issue or something that is being missed. And so we have the ability to provide this and other kinds of accuracy measures as required and as requested. As was mentioned, we've looked at forecasting of sales tax revenues in the Grand Forks area. You know, you can see in this regard there are several things going on this chart that includes the actual values, predicted values, a forecast that includes an 80% confidence interval and a 95% confidence interval, as well as a most likely scenario, which were part of the requirements asked of. High, a low, a most likely can be included in here as well. One of the things that I would also mention, I would also emphasize, is that we're very skilled, I think, and expert at data visualization, providing data in ways that it makes certain attributes more clear. We did a seasonal plot. This is called a polar plot. And again, avoiding the technical details, one of the things that you can learn from this is whether revenues are increasing, decreasing, but at the same time, if there are seasonal patterns, because you'd see a bump up in a given month. And so those are the kinds of things that we can get. I know it looks like a kid's spirograph with Christmas coming. This is the kind of thing that, you know, every kid wants to find underneath the tree. But these things, you know, are helpful and insightful in that regard. One of the big things that I will say is our attribute is that we know North Dakota. When we field significant numbers of interview requests about the state of North Dakota's economy, what's happening in North Dakota's economy. We get it from national media outlets, local media outlets. When the Federal Reserve Bank of Minneapolis was hosting a regional economic conference, twice they invited me down to give my read on North Dakota, what was happening in North Dakota, and how North Dakota fit into the Minneapolis Fed region. You know, the various different factors included the state of the economy, immigration issues, media requests have focused on things like public banking. North Dakota is no longer the only state in the union that has a public bank. California is pushing that way, already passed a law, New Jersey's moving those directions. And these are some of the things that make North Dakota right now unique, distinct, but are important factors to figure into how the forecast model will work and will make sense. So a few things that we've seen happen. There's obviously been dramatic structural change in the state economy. Population, other resource constraints have become difficult to manage at times and in differing degrees in different parts of the state. We also have new programs or structures that could impact growth and development in the state and therefore impact economic performance, impact revenue generation. The blue bar on this graph is the first quarter real GDP contribution from each of the various sectors. This is the first quarter of 2005. 2019 quarter two is the green bar. And I use this to highlight this second bar, which is, or second set of bars, excuse me, which is mining. And we went from mining contributing really less than 5% to the state economy to almost 16% in terms of state gross domestic product. At the same time, agriculture has stayed about the same. We've seen some increases in other areas too, though I would tell you that they're related to agriculture and mining very closely. That last set of bars is government. Government's gone down from over 16% of the state real gross domestic product to less than 10%. And so these are structural changes in the state economy that have occurred. We think that they can continue to occur, and that would be important as far as looking at the forecast for the state.
Representative Delzer has a question.
Yes.
Sir, maybe you said, but are these like dollars?
I'm sorry, you're referring to this? Yes, well, these are all in 2012 dollars.
2012?
Yep, so there's no inflation effect.
So you took half up, half down.
Well, it's a little more complicated formula than that, but yes, essentially. It's all one standard dollar value.
Okay.
Population, an enormous issue for North Dakota for a long time. I was very happy to be out here because I also had meetings with Vital Records this morning. I had a meeting with some census people so that I was able to talk population. I do a lot of demographic work. I find it very interesting. 2015, this is the county net migration rate, and you can see that, no surprise, the oil patch was a very significant source of county in-migration in the state. When oil prices changed and dropped 2015 into 2016, you see a dramatic change. And the dramatic change is actually not the rest of the state. The rest of the state essentially stayed the same, but western North Dakota went from a hot spot to a cool spot in essentially 1 year in terms of in-migration into the counties. This population redistribution is important. It's vital in terms of businesses getting the workforce in that they need. It's another important aspect when it comes to talking about how businesses are going to generate their economic output and how they're going to then be able to pay the taxes and how the population will be able to pay the various taxes that they're assessed. To highlight this a little further, the population issues, this is the Williston labor force. This is one that I presented to the committee in 2017. You can see Bismarck is a blue line. Fargo, I believe, is on this screen, looks somewhat purple. Grand Forks is red, and then Williston is a dark green. And the major metro areas in the state since the early 2000s have kind of bounced along. A little bit of growth, a little bit of decline, a little bit of growth, a little bit of decline. Williston went through an enormous and radical shift, both up and down. Very intimately connected to the oil industry, very intimately connected to oil prices and what goes on there. But again, this has only served to highlight that, A, we understand the North Dakota data. We understand the data that is relevant to economic performance, revenue generation, and the like. Different structures. The Legacy Fund is something new. The Legacy Fund is something different. And I know there are meetings going on around the state that are discussing the Legacy Fund, what is to be done with it, how it is to be changed or allocated, and I'm very glad that that's not my decision. But as those kinds of decisions come forward, it is entirely possible that these disbursements out of it could be growth-enhancing, growth-changing. And so what you see here is an interest, dividend, investment income to the Legacy Fund, again, in that sort of seasonal fluctuation. And you can see, again, it's spiraling outward, which means that it's growing, which is a good thing. But then you can see that there are some months that are higher than others for a variety of reasons. And so when is that fund at a particular level, and why is it at a particular level? These are the kind of things that we think, you know, can help forecasting and are important constraint on forecasting. In conclusion, we feel that the institute provides the right mix of technical abilities, the understanding of North Dakota, a track record of finding, dealing with, working with North Dakota data, and a responsiveness to client needs, legislator needs, or city council needs, and the like. And that concludes my presentation.
Okay, Dr. Flynn, the North Dakota economy is reliant on energy sector and agriculture sector. Could you flesh out a little more your expertise and how you plan or how you would plan to deal with the ag economy?
Sure. So there are two parts to that question. In terms of the ag economy, I was very happy to have attended a meeting with some local farmers from the Grand Forks area recently. There are obviously some concerns in the ag economy. Corn is a very big concern in my region of the state. Lots of people worried about corn, leaving it in the field and the like right now based on prices. I think there are two things to go along with that. One is an understanding of input costs. What they're faced with input costs right now, as well as what the prices that they're able to get. And so part of that would be forecasting these prices, seeing where they're going. But the one of the bigger issues that comes along with this is then understanding that the ag economy is an underpinning in many counties in the state of a lot of the other economic activity. So one of the specifics was motor vehicle sales. And so looking at some of these related types of revenue streams would require you to look and see that the impact from bad crop performance or bad crop pricing is going to sort of cascade, if you will, through other sectors of the local economy. And we have models in place that allow us to say, all right, production goes in this particular direction. How does this impact, for example, you could say the car district, the car dealership industry in particular, or we could look at several other of those kinds of categories. We have something like 400 sectors in the model for the various different counties in North Dakota. And on the energy front, did you want me to deal with that one?
Yes, please.
Okay. On the energy front, so I know mentioned West Texas Intermediate Crude. There is also the North Dakota first purchase price data that is a price per barrel as well. It is very much correlated with West Texas Intermediate Crude, but there are times when the North Dakota first purchase price deviates, and that is the actual price that you're dealing with in North Dakota. You can quote West Texas Intermediate Crude, and that's going to oftentimes be very close, but if there are any kinds of problems, whether we're talking about transportation network problems, production problems, weather issues, there's the opportunity for the North Dakota first purchase price to deviate from the quoted West Texas Intermediate Crude. And so I think you need to track both of those, see what's happening in those arenas to know that there could be problems not necessarily picked up by West Texas Intermediate Crude pricing that would be picked up in that North Dakota first purchase price. So that would be that. The other is that, in all honesty, the price is an important part of what's going on, but the availability of labor has been a significant constraint in western North Dakota, but realistically in much of the state. We hear it a lot that there just are not workers, or that you're unable to retain workers. And this presents a significant constraint on what kind of economic growth the state can attain. In all likelihood, as phenomenal as the growth record has been in the state, it could have been even better. But I think a contribution of national economic policies and some issues within the state combined to mean that we didn't get all of the labor in that we would need to realize our full potential growth.
Other questions? Yes, Senator Woodner.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Flynn, are there any other indicators in the oil world that you look at? I mean, you talked about, you know, labor, the price here in North Dakota, mm-hmm. WTI and so mm-hmm. forth. Are there anything else that you would look to give you an idea of what's going to happen in the future in the worldwide?
Sure. In the realm of soft information, that is not necessarily quantitative information. The events that surround OPEC meetings are obviously a big deal. What's happening in Saudi Arabia? I'm very, very fortunate to have a former student of mine who works with a Saudi Arabian oil think tank in Saudi Arabia. And so, you know, we've had some very enlightening discussions about policy within the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, how they view OPEC, how OPEC is trying to, you know, for lack of a better word, prop up prices, manipulate prices, and what's going on there. So I think, again, global stance, the stance of global players is a very important aspect to that as well. And that comes into, I would submit as some scenario building, what's going to happen with prices, how do these things transmit in particular ways and the like.
To piggyback on that particular question, one of the, North Dakota has a pretty robust energy sector within government in the Industrial Commission, et cetera. Would you envision working with and receiving data from such places as Lynn Helms or the oil industry as far as building your case for what you're going to be projecting?
Absolutely. Is it Kringstad? Yeah, is that there are a variety of people and individuals around state government, around private sector that's closely tied to state government that I think are indispensable partners in this. And my general perception, when I have reached out on any number of issues to anybody related to data about population or the economy in North Dakota, is that there's a generally receptive attitude towards sharing information and working together. And so I would expect to work on that, continue that, absolutely.
One of the things we hear year after year, and I'm not putting it down, is the difficulty of projecting accurately corporate income tax.
Mm-hmm.
It is something that typically when we have presentations, they say, you know, this is the best we can do, but there are so many variables. Do you have the answer to corporate income tax projections, or do you agree with the general idea that it's a tough area?
I will not say I have the answer, no. I would say that I think within the confines of scenarios and models, as well as, again, the access to soft information, the relationships with industry already that I have and that I expect we would be able to continue to develop, that I think that would give us insights into better structure of corporate income tax modeling for the state and, you know, what the various aspects are. In general, with any of this tax forecasting, one of the things you obviously need to consider is the underlying activity that generates the tax. And so you have to take that next step and say, well, what exactly is the incentive? In this case, you mentioned corporate income tax. What exactly is the incentive of these various groups, and what are their alternatives, and why are they engaged in the behavior they are? And I think with some careful analysis of that, I think the accuracy can be improved. But I also think, again, because we're looking forward, talking to the businesses and understanding, you know, what they're faced with and why they may be considering certain decisions would be an important part of that.
Excuse me. Yes, Representative Clemente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Flynn, I guess I'd like to hear more about your qualifications and experience. It's very cryptic, I would say, in this proposal.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And so could you relate to us, you know, what your education is, where you got it, what your degrees are in,
sure,
and then also your employment history, if you may, yeah, including what you did and where you did it.
Sure.
And I, after you're done with that, I'd like to hear if you could tell me about the other members of your key personnel that are listed here.
So do you want me to go as far back as undergraduate or just my graduate degree?
Just go ahead and start.
Okay. I did my undergraduate in economics at Boston College, and then which makes me the least liked individual on UND's campus during hockey season. But then I went to Indiana University. I received a master's degree in economics and a PhD in economics, both from Indiana University. My areas of concentration included financial economics, demographics, monetary and macroeconomics. And then my first job out of grad school was the University of North Dakota. So I came to the University of North Dakota in 2001. I have been here since then, make my home in Grand Forks, you know, had a few kids, so I helped the North Dakota population problem at times. Then in terms of other work experience, so aside from the work at the university, I've done numerous independent consulting opportunities, some looking at a variety of economic factors with the North Dakota State Mill, looked at issues with them. I worked with the North Dakota Small Business Development Center on a predictive modeling tool in terms of helping the regional consultants work with their small businesses as they came in, trying to predict what, you know, what would be the likely success of business type A versus business type B, some of the financial projections for the Small Business Development Center, and the like there. I've worked with the city of Grand Forks on various financial projections at times. Nothing consistent in that regard. They have a variety of people they go through, so I think it's kind of a rotation, if you will. In terms of the other members,
before you go on,
oh, I'm sorry.
Before you go on, I guess when you started at UND in 2001, then could you give me a little more information on what you did at UND?
Oh, sure, sure, absolutely. So the first, I'd say 6-7 years I was at UND were focused mostly on my teaching and some academic-related research. looking at things like the extension of credit by small businesses in colonial America. I like finding interesting data sources and looking at those kinds of practices. So a lot of teaching. I think.
What is it that you were teaching?
Well, it's varied over the years. Right now I teach forecasting. I teach demographics to graduate students. I also teach business analytics for sports business. I've taught statistics, banking classes, principles of banking, bank regulation, as well as then the micro, the macro, the basic statistics, those intro level classes as well. And so I've had a very extensive set of classes that I've taught over the years there, kind of a fill-in as needed, offer a new class as needed. I also worked with the university administration when budget issues arose to try to develop metrics by which they could evaluate unit performance, in some cases down to the department level. Looking at both financial and graduation type numbers. That would be like a student headcount and then a financial metric as well. And so, you know, I've worn many hats in that regard, but have maintained as the member of the Department of Economics. And in, I'm sorry to say, I don't know precisely, I think maybe 2011, the Department of Finance was no longer an independent department and was joined with the Department of Economics, and I became the head of that unit.
And then regarding the other two people on your personnel?
Yes, Dr. Cullen Gunner is a PhD from the University of Wisconsin at Madison. I believe that's also his master's degree. He also has a master's degree in, I believe it's finance or financial economics from University of Southern California. Cullen and I started at UND at the same time, 2001. He and I have you know, both taught an array of classes. He teaches some applied statistics classes. In terms of other, beyond the teaching and the academic research, other projects he's done, he's worked with the Center for Innovation when, certainly I know when Bruce Jovic was in charge of it, he was working with them on economic analysis of various aspects of the clients working with the Center for Innovation. He's also worked doing economic analysis for the State Department of Transportation in the past. I don't think recently, but certainly for a couple of biennia, he worked on that. And then Dan Owens has a master's degree from the University of Kentucky, and he has done a variety of I'll call it sort of soft information generation. He's worked on I don't think it qualifies as work, but he's been on boards, gone to various chamber meetings and the like, engaged in that way and finding out some of the more qualitative information that people have been willing to provide. But he also has the quantitative skills needed to work on models and the like.
And the Institute, when was that formed?
I believe it was approved by the State Board of Higher Ed in September or October of this year.
Representative Gelser.
Dr. Flynn, that was just formed. Was it formed specifically to come do this RFP, or how many more are you planning to do, and what are you going to go after?
It was not specifically formed. The requests were put in last spring to do this, well before the RFP. It takes time, I think, I don't know the exact timeline, but the has to go through various approvals on campus and at the state level, and it would never have been able to be put together in time for this. In terms of other types of things, I would go back to our mission and say that since it's focused on basic and applied research for the state, I will say it will be, you know, similar types of activities. Are there forecasts or economic analyses needed in terms of state or sub-state regions that would benefit from economic analysis? I think that would be one of the key things that we would be pursuing. But I will tell you that as of right now, there is no other thing on the plate. Again, it having been approved only in October, there's not been a listing of things that we're going to go after in specific.
So, if I may, yeah, continue, Mr. Chairman, please. How much of your time do you expect this particular RFP to take? I mean, how much more could you take on before it took away from what you can do with this?
Well, I think this one would be my highest priority from a personal research level. One of the things, again, that I think is a real virtue is that the Institute is open and available and generates participation from all faculty. We've had interest from all departments in this, and so it is not the case that I would be engaged in every single one. This one, because I would be listed as the, I am listed as the principal investigator on UND's paperwork, this would be my highest priority, and other things would have to be put to other things, other people, other personnel as principal, and maybe get a small portion of my time in that regard.
Continue.
How do you see presenting your information to the legislature?
I think it's going to depend on exactly what you want. In terms of what I believe there were four particular, it was either three or four, particular dates mentioned, months mentioned. It would be my expectation that there would be some kind of a written information provided, and then a face-to-face meeting provided. At the same time, I would assume that you would want the data in some kind of a numerical format, so I would assume a spreadsheet or something like that. So I think, you know, a variety of formats, but it would obviously include face-to-face communication as well as any kind of written or spreadsheet type information.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, if I may, Alan?
Yes.
Last time, did you give information to IHS about how you wanted to see?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, we as staff work with them to develop kind of the format to provide it in, yeah.
And whoever gets it, you'll do that again this time.
Yeah.
Okay.
Any additional questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Now we will hear a presentation from IHS Market. And welcome.
Thank you. Thank you again, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. It's nice to be back here again and be able to talk to you about these issues that were so important 2 years ago and certainly important today. My name's Brendan O'Neill. I'm an executive director in the IHS Market Economics and Country Risk Consulting Group. And within that group, we do a lot of our state and local government work, both tax forecasting, economic development, transportation research, and the like. So, my colleague, Jim Diffley, whom most of you or all of you on this committee know, was expected to join me here today, but he got stuck in New Jersey due to weather and travel, so I'll do my best to try to cover what he would have otherwise talked about. And I don't have a formal slide presentation. I thought it best to dispense with the overview of IHS Market. I think most of you know who we are. I'm happy to give a quick summary of that, but I did not want to waste this committee's time covering things that I think you already knew. But for the sake of the summary view, IHS Market is a research data analytics company. We've been in business for over 50 years. We have 15,000 employees globally. I personally work out of our Washington, D.C. office. But the history of the company is really a firm that is made up of many acquisitions of smaller research outfits acquired over the course of the last 15 years with strong concentrations really in three fundamental areas, areas of finance, energy and natural resources, or what we broadly call resources, and transportation. And within the economics business, we sit in our finance group, but We work closely with our colleagues, specifically our energy colleagues and our agriculture colleagues, which sit in our resources division. When we undertook this engagement with you a couple of years ago, our fundamental goal was really to help inform the decision making that this committee has to undertake as part of budgeting and planning, estimating revenues and allocating resources. I think overall, over the course of the couple of years, we were pleased with the way a lot of the forecasts went, but I think anytime we try to stay within the plus or minus 5% range of estimates is that's a standard we aspire to and try to hit, but not it's not without areas where we can improve upon. And I think, Mr. Chairman, you had referenced, the challenges of forecasting corporate income. Clearly one that we, see the challenges in doing that. I think it is a common challenge across anybody doing forecasting. But I think it was compounded in particular over this cycle in light of federal tax reform, which introduced some new dynamics into trying to estimate revenues with new policy on the books. So I think that was not unique to North Dakota in the sense that it was not just a challenge in forecasting revenues for North Dakota, but in fact, our other state clients, our other city clients where we do revenue forecasting, we had the same challenge. So I think that's, the benefit of experience is you can go back and think about how you make adjustments in your models, in your process, and overcome those challenges as you go forward. I think other areas where we'd like to see, ourselves improve is I think we did an excellent job, forecasting the price path of WTI. As I think this committee knows, but, it's not just those economists that we list in our proposal that are supporting this effort or those, energy analysts or agricultural analysts that are supporting this effort. But it's really, we leverage the entire capital base of IHS Market, which is an extensive data of all types. For example, we have data on every well in the world, and we track the production of that data. We have metrics for agriculture production, farm income, input costs for every country, and within the U.S., even down to the county level. Actually, we've just recently, over the course of the last several months, integrated an acquisition of the largest agricultural research firm in the world, was a firm known as Informa Agribusiness, which is now part of IHS Market, which I think for us is actually going to enhance, hopefully, the level of detail that we can provide this committee and staff as we try to understand how ag is a driver within the state economy. Our approach to offering a baseline forecast along with the optimistic, pessimistic forecast hopefully was a benefit to this committee in understanding the different assumptions and the different ranges based on different assumptions that are generated with these revenue estimates. I think our posture over the course of the last 2 years with our baseline forecast has been leans more to the conservative side of those estimates. Mindful of the genesis of why this forecasting process began, we certainly were always cognizant of the fact that, if you're going to, and as forecasters, nobody, you go into the business understanding that you're going to be wrong most of the time, but it's just a question of, how close can you get to the mark? And our thinking was we certainly didn't want a situation, with Jim and his experience in working in tax forecasting and state government, my own experience in a couple of state legislatures, we know the risks to missing on the upside as opposed to the low side are significant, and we were conscious not to do that. So, hence the reason for wanting to prepare the optimistic and the pessimistic scenarios. I think, our baseline scenarios on things like sales the sales taxes, personal income taxes were solid. I think that the error rate improves as you moved up to the optimistic scenario, but by and large, I think we're comfortable with the baseline that we're offering this committee. You know, I think over the course, again, over the course of the last couple of years, we may have been a little bit more bearish in terms of the production, the oil production within North Dakota, knowing that many of the operators, particularly the independent operators and the smaller operators, are under significant pressure to start driving profits, maintain some type of capital discipline. You know, we thought that discipline might come sooner than it did, but again, we do still see that rationing happening. We've seen a 32% reduction in rig counts in North Dakota since March. So, you know, we do start to see the smaller operators, the independents, beginning to rationalize, being a little bit more disciplined with their capital outlays as they, you know, strive towards profitability. You know, within our proposal, you know, what would we attempt to enhance over the course of the next term if selected? We've had this discussion, and I, you know, serve as kind of executive in charge. I'm not in the project day to day yet, like Jim Diffley and the broader team is, but you know, I try to make sure that we have the right resources allocated to the project, the right people working on it, and I think one of the things we do want to do is bring more of our upstream people into the process, over, you know, if awarded, you know, for the next cycle. I've personally talked with a number of my colleagues on the upstream side, and you know, they're, you know, intimately familiar with the production activity here. They actively work on projects, you know, within these basins. So, you know, I think, and they also understand the broader dynamic of, you know, thinking about this basin versus, say, you know, the activity that's happening in the Permian, which is attracting much of the attention, much of the investment, you know, over other plays, you know, in the United States. So, you know, I think I'd like to see them become more part of the process. I'd like to give them the opportunity, you know, give the committee the opportunity to bring them in and hear their own testimony as you go into these planning cycles, these budgeting cycles. As I said, we've expanded our agriculture team by, I would say, at least 300 additional agricultural analysts. That gives us insight, you know, beyond the insight we're already bringing in terms of, you know, county level production of ag commodities, you know, county level farm income and those types of things. We actually have, you know, an even higher resolution view into, you know, specific farm level details. So not necessarily always public information, but you know, certainly information within our capital base that we can bring to bear to, you know, enhance the forecasting. And again, you know, we can give the baseline. I think our goal ultimately is to make sure that we've been really clear about what our assumptions are, been really clear about what's driving our forecast, so this committee can make their own decisions about, you know, which directions they choose to go with the estimates. You know, I think we'll continue with the scenarios, not just the baseline case, the optimistic and the pessimistic scenario, but we also, over the course of the last couple of years, had run some ad hoc scenarios looking at different well counts and the potential for revenue under different well counts, or enhancing the number of well counts, increasing the number of well counts, decreasing. You know, I think that's important for two reasons. One, you know, we want to be agile and responsive to the committee as they may have these specific requests to better understand, you know, near-term developments, whether it be in the oil sector or another industrial sector. But I think it also goes beyond that to the, you know, the importance of the relationship that we've hopefully tried to establish here, which is to say, you know, we're partner to you in this important exercise, and you know, of course, we will outline within a scope the different things that we will try to cover, but, you know, to be a good partner, you know, it means being able to go and engage on these ad hoc requests and try to provide the committee more than the more information than they just, you know, would otherwise expect out of a simple contract. So, you know, I think that that is something that we take seriously in sustaining these partnerships with our clients. You know, I guess in summary, and happy to take the, any questions. You know, we certainly have people that understand, you know, things at a basin level, things at a well level, things at a farm level. But what we try to do in the course of doing this forecast work is put it in a global context. Because these are global commodities, they're going to be influenced by global dynamics, global economic dynamics. So, you know, I think we you know, I appreciate wanting to understand things as a more local level, and we look for ideas to enhance that understanding. But we also know that, you know, what, you know, OPEC does, what the Vienna Alliance does, what happens with tariffs and soybeans. These are all things that ultimately affect what kind of revenue estimates are going to be generated here. So hopefully, you know, that has come through in the last couple of years in terms of the work we've tried to do to support the committee, is keep it in a global context, but also, you know, be able to surface those unique local issues that, that also are a driver of, you know, these receipts. So with that, I thank you for your time and happy to answer any questions.
During the presentations last year, there appeared on the part of a number of legislators, and it could have been legislators, you know, fault. It could have been the fault of the presentation. There was kind of a, there wasn't really an understanding of how your energy team and how that particular group interfaced. Folks got the impression that here was IHS over here, and all of a sudden here are these guys over there. And I think there were a number of legislators that didn't understand how that all fit together. Could you help us complete that puzzle?
Sure. So one of the things the economics business does within IHS Market is really set a lot of the you know, the underlying forecast and assumptions for the forecasting that and analysis that is done at the individual industry level, industry sector level analysts. So, you know, within our group, within the economics group, we're, you know, roughly 350 people. But, you know, we have to also, in many ways, set the table for a couple thousand other analysts who are going to look at the chemical sector, the automotive sector, you know, upstream, midstream, downstream, you know, power, gas, renewable sectors. You know, so, you know, I think at some level, our analysis, our forecasts, our economic data is underpinning those forecasts created by the upstream group. But, you know, we also know that, you know, there are also dynamics, non-economic dynamics, you know, by virtue of players like OPEC that, you know, have the ability to manipulate a market as a cartel. And you know, there are non-economic dynamics that come into play, you know, which may be the cause for some divergence in terms of where their analysis comes from, where the energy group's analysis comes from. But, you know, I think having sat on some of the conference calls, you know, I get the disconnect in that, you know, they were not so much part of, you know, the revenue estimating process as they needed to be. And, you know, I think that forced, you know, me in particular as the person who, you know, kind of oversees what resources and what people we bring into the project, that, you know, I think there were some different people that I might bring into this that, you know how we work and know the specific reasons why, you know, this particular forecast work is different than, you know, what they might do for one of the upstream operators, for example. So, you know, I think from a project and a project management standpoint, you know, we need them better integrated into the process. It's not just enough to have the expertise, but they need to understand it in the context of revenue forecasting. And I, that, those are the changes in terms of the personnel that I've made in this proposal to overcome maybe, you know, some of that disconnect in the past.
And that disconnect was something that left some people cold.
Yeah.
Representative Delzer.
Well, just kind of a follow-up to that is one of the things that didn't seem like we necessarily had people there that could answer the questions that were being asked. And I think that's for both groups that the presentation is a big deal when it comes, just like with the one that comes out of the executive branch as well. It's a big deal of how you're able to present your information and make sure that everybody can have their questions answered, because there are a number of them that we tried to do, I think, over the phone. So the real question is how many, you know, if you get this, how many of your head people do you plan to bring in when you do the presentations?
Yeah, that's a really fair point. And I think, you know, in trying to keep a proposal priced reasonably, you know, you balance the analysis with the travel and so forth. And I would agree with you in that, you know, conference call is probably the suboptimal way to do it. So, you know, our plan as a team would to have not just Jim, who is our lead forecaster, regional economic forecaster for the economics business, but also have representation from, in this case, Curtis Smith is the gentleman I've reached out to, as well as one of the people in the agriculture group to be on site, you know, for these hearings, because I think it will have a material difference.
So you built that into your proposed
we
budget?
We did, yeah.
Okay.
Senator Wardner.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. O'Neill, the big thing is when those presentations come, especially in the oil, because oil is a driving factor, and agriculture. The agriculture presentation was, you know, one that I think was a little bit better. But when people ask, you know, why do you think that the price is going to be this? And then we need, they're looking for comfort.
Yeah.
They're looking for saying, this, and this is going on in the world, in the United States, and this is what's driving it. That's what gives legislators comfort. And the same with ag, being able to have some supporting data that says, this is why we arrived at this particular production or price or whatever. Thank you.
Yeah, excellent point, Senator. And I think we're always conscious of you know, how much data is too much, you know, because we're in a world in a wash in data, and we need to be careful of, you know, sometimes you miss the forest or the trees, but I think any supporting evidence, and it's good feedback, supporting evidence that we can provide as it relates to, you know, soybeans, sorghum, corn, whatever, you know, wheat, as well as, you know, that of oil, natural gas, you know, we're certainly happy to do that, and I think, you know, with some talk about data visualization, I think there are also ways to make that data more digestible as well. So I think that's always important for us is, you know, on the economic side, is making really transparent the assumptions of what are driving the forecast. And we need, you know, and we should do that equally well on the commodity side as well, you know, too.
Representative Pollard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Can you give me a little more insight on Informa Agriculture, what it does, what it's doing now? And also, are you into production estimates as well, or is Informa into production estimates?
Yeah, so we've worked, okay, so Informa, which I think is, you know, they have a good group of guys that I've been working with in the Washington office. They are formerly, one of the legacy companies of Informa was Sparks. I don't know if anybody's familiar with Sparks Agriculture, but it's a longtime brand in the applied agricultural research space. So they, we acquired them back in officially, I think, end of July, August 1st. And with them, they are a global presence. I think they probably have about 400 people in total, maybe, you know, 300 of which are ag economists, analysts, agronomists, et cetera. So in the few occasions that I've gotten to work with some of them, I think they bring a range of expertise that, you know, more than supplements what we had before. I mean, of course, we did have a really strong group that was doing production, you know, by commodity, you know, down to the county level. They also do it, you know, for you know, dozens of countries as well. But I think with Informa, you know, I think they can also give us additional insight into some of the input costs associated with farming, because again, you know, what's important here, you know, there's production, but what it boils down to is farm income, and that's a function of not just yield, but you know, what is the cost of fertilizer, you know, the cost of seed, cost of irrigation, and so forth. So I think they've got, you know, while our legacy ag group was doing those production forecasts, you know, across many different commodities, they have specialists in specific commodities as well, which we can draw from.
Yes, Representative Clemente.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. O'Neill, the economic data that you rely on to make your forecasting, I had just a question about that. Are the sources for that economic data generally available to the public, or is it something that's proprietary and only you can get?
So the data that we rely on within the economics business is largely publicly available. Now we have our own proprietary data that we forecast both at a regional level as well as an industry sector level. But you know, if you look at the historical data sources, you know, they would come from places like the Bureau of Economic Analysis, the Census, you know, Bureau of Labor Statistics. These are all not historical data, not forecast data, but these are all data sets that are publicly available. What we do is then take that and through our own modeling infrastructure, you know, look at things like, you know, from BLS or something, the producer price indices, and layer a forecast onto that based on, you know, our insight. You know, but that said, I think one of the major initiatives within both our economics business at IHS Market as well as the broader enterprise is that is the use of alternative data sources. And I said earlier that, you know, the world is awash in data, and somebody has to try to make sense of that. you know, I often will tell colleagues that, you know, we have, you know, flogged this data, public data set for everything it's worth. You know, how much more can we actually get out of it? You know, how much more insight? And I think there's a lot of public data out there. I don't think we've flogged it all. But I also think that it's important to rely on, you know, alternative data sources, both internal and external. You know, some of that external could be derived through, you know, surveys we initiate, for example, you know, the use of different statistical or econometric data science techniques to take disparate data sources, knit them together in a way that there is some real insight that falls out of that. So I think, you know, being in the data business, you know, it's important for us to not just rely on what is publicly available, but whatever else we can access. And you know, I'll give one example in terms of thinking about, you know, what we use in the model to forecast, you know, vehicle sales, vehicle tax, and so forth. We have, you know, a data set we call Polk, and this company captures all the vehicle registrations within the United States and other countries. But it's a unique data set to us. It certainly helps in the tax forecasting we do as it relates to, you know, vehicle tax registrations and so forth, excise tax. You know, and that's a differentiator, I guess, you know, for us, is that, you know, we have access to certain data sources that nobody else does. They are also, this company also owns their other businesses, Carfax, which, you know, everybody knows when they go to look at a vehicle and inspection and so forth when they buy a new car. But you know, there's lots of interesting data that we're pulling out of Carfax that can be used in lots of different ways beyond just you know, for an automotive sector application. So to sort of, you know, make a short answer long, I think we use both. We will flog the public data sources for everything we can to get out of get the insights out of those, but we will also leverage our internal sources because they will give a unique insight that we won't find elsewhere.
Continue.
Well, a major part of this project relates to agriculture-related prices and so forth. Is that something that you would have resources that no one else could get to?
Certainly, there's good detail at the USDA level, and we leverage that for sure. But part of our business is forecasting those prices for, you know, any number of clients, whether they be big fertilizer companies or agribusiness companies or seed manufacturers or governments alike. So, you know, I think if it's relevant to the tax forecasting, we would look at it and test it in the modeling process. And again, I think with Informa, we have access to new data that we hadn't when we started this process.
Continue. Yeah, continue.
Well, you talk about the modeling process. Could you kind of give me an idea of what you're talking about there?
Well, I mean, I think you look at the different drivers, and I will, you know, I won't get, I appreciated Dr. Flynn's joke about BC hockey and UMD. As a hockey player myself, I'm always cautious about getting on thin ice. So, you know, Jim is, and I'm more than happy to get a written response to the committee to really do this because I'm not involved in the modeling process. But I can give you a sense in terms of the key drivers that we look at when looking across the different revenue streams. You know, and again, these aren't all of them, but when you look at things like, you know, the sales and use tax, we look at the Bakken well, you know, count. You know, we look at personal consumption expenditures, again, public data set that we use in the process. You know, motor vehicle excise tax, we use the Polk data, which specifically we're looking at new passenger and light truck registrations for North Dakota. You know, again, looking at things like the BLS data as well as the state data, you know, we'll look at employment in the resources and mining sector. So again, you know, there's a series of weightings that goes through looking at these different indicators and trying to, you know, get the right model fit to estimate revenues. And part of that process, I didn't go through all the particular drivers, but you know, part of what you do in your process is you test history first before you test a forecast. So the process we go through called backcasting to say, all right, based on the way you've set up your model, could you accurately forecast history in order to use that model to predict the future? And there are always times where you have to make adjustments because, you know, the structure of the economy, you know, in history, say 10 years ago, is not the same as, you know, particularly in North Dakota, is the structure of the economy today. So I would say, you know, 10 years ago, you probably had, 10 years forward, you have five times as many jobs in the oil and gas sector in North Dakota as you did 10 years ago. So again, you know, you have to make adjustments in that process, but in a simplified way, you backcast to test that model before you see how those drivers work in a forecast situation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And are there any additional interested persons? That's what the agenda says. And after we hear from the interested persons in the audience, the committee will take a 10, 15 minute break. Then we will come back and have committee discussion and decision time. Is there anyone here who falls under the category of interested person that wants to tell us some things? Okay, we will take a, we will break till, I'm sure if that clock is right, 2:30. Yeah.
How are you?
The committee will come back to order. We now will open up a period of discussion. I would suggest that if someone wants to discuss, we should discuss based upon a motion, and then the committee will discuss, and that's how it'll go. Representative Pollard?
Well, unless somebody has something else, I guess for discussion purposes, I would throw a motion out there, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, okay.
Mr. Chairman, I would make the motion that we would accept IHS.
IHS Market, and we have a second. Discussion.
And Mr. Chairman?
Oh, yes.
Just real quick, last legislative we had IHS, I would say the presentation was probably a little anemic, but with what we hear today, I like the idea of Informa Ag. I'll say Informa Ag just because it's simpler to say, but with that and with their support staff, I feel more comfortable with that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Representative Delzer?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and first I'd like to say I very much appreciate both of them doing the presentation. I think it was very good by both of them. I think we have some history with IHS. It is a little bit cheaper, not a whole lot, but a little bit. I think they have some sort of idea of what we expect now. I think in 2 years, if we do this again, and the Institute for, I don't have the right name, the group out of UND, if they come back with some work that they've done, it might be a different option to look at both of them at that time. But currently, and you know, when we forecast since 15, the oil's been kind of all over the board. The big one is sales tax, of course. Corporate income tax is hard to predict and get correct. The motor vehicle isn't so bad. But the oil, we sure need to hear everything we can, but in the end, I think it's the legislature talking to some of the industry people and the two different economist groups, as well as OMB, that makes the decision on where oil ends up anyway.
Senator Heckman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll support IHS too, but I would like to also say thank you to UND for coming with their proposal. My concern about UND is that it might be too big of a project for them right now, knowing that they haven't delved into something this big before, and this is a very important decision for us when we come into the legislature to have the numbers, and we need them to be correct, and we need to have the connections, I think, that IHS has around the world to bring those numbers forward to us. But I really want to thank both of them for coming today, and I think it's, you know, we got the numbers from IHS last time, and I'm going to be the outlier here in saying I enjoyed their presentation in a different manner. I thought they gave us a lot of inside information that we didn't need specifically for appropriations, but that they had gathered. And so as appropriators, I think you're looking more at specific areas and final numbers. And I was looking more at how did you get those numbers and what does it mean in the underlying, especially in the agribusiness area. So I appreciated IHS's presentation last year and look forward, if the vote goes that way today, to have another good presentation from them.
Any other discussion? Senator Wardner.
Just short. First of all, I want to thank both entities for bringing in their proposal. Appreciate that. And I just want to reaffirm one of the things I mentioned when I mentioned it earlier, and that is especially for appropriations. They need to know why. You got to be able to know the commodities in North Dakota, and you got to, under each commodity, whether it's wheat, corn, soybeans, this is why the markets are going to go where they are, and or they're not going to, or we got the tariffs on, and we see this. Make sure that legislators like to hear that, gives them comfort. I thought that was lacking in the presentation, and especially in the oil. Whoever gives the presentation has got to know North Dakota inside out. That makes us feel good and gives us confidence. So, yeah, I would agree with the speakers ahead of me that I would go with IHS.
Anyone else? Okay, we have a motion to approve IHS market as the legislative forecast group. Would you call the roll, please?
Chairman Holmberg?
Aye.
Senators Cook?
Aye.
Heckman?
Aye.
Wardner?
Aye.
Representatives Delzer?
Yes.
Boucher?
Aye.
Quamine?
Yes.
And Pollock?
Aye.
Mr. Chairman, the motion carries.
Okay, the motion has carried, and that particular portion of our meeting is done. Again, as others have done, I want to thank both entities for coming here today. And I know, and I'm sure everyone on this committee knows, that what happens between now and next January, February, is also very difficult to predict. A lot of what happens even in the ag economy in North Dakota depends upon what the federal government is doing and what they do or say they're going to do and say they're not going to do. And at the end of the day, in a presidential election year, you know, hold on to your hat, because who knows what will be out there over the next months. But is there any motion to adjourn? Second? Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay. Opposed? Motion carried. The committee is adjourned.